Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is January 16th, 2014. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, our theme tonight is Breakaway 2014. That's what our poster is. That was the name for our wrap-up Breakaway. The transcript, which we've been working extra hard on, is going to be ready next week, and I hope you check it out. Please read it. This wrap-up is designed to give you a great framework for this year. We're watching acceleration of change across the board, and I think if you have that framework, you'll have a context to manage things in, and the global weirdness will not seem as weird as it otherwise would. I love a good framework. Money and markets, what a week. You know, we watched last year as interest rates slowly rose. The developed world equity markets were absolutely much stronger than expected. And it was not just as a result of higher earnings. A lot of it, particularly the S&P 500, was an expansion of price-earnings ratios. And the big question coming into the year-end is, can the equity market stay strong? After a bit of a correction last week, they continue to stay strong. The signal, all signals are the developed world is going to be doing good. It's not a good story for commodities and emerging markets, both of which were down. Gold and silver have held the 1200 support line and began to sort of pick their heads up, looking like they might be stronger. We saw Rambus cover his shorts and say, should we go long? But it's not breaking up yet. So my expectation is this probably won't be a good year for commodities and precious metals, but let's see how it goes. Do not sell your core position. If anything, every indication is that physical gold and silver is becoming more and more important in the global currency, not less. Because the big question this year when you look at equity markets is how in the world are corporations going to continue to maintain their earnings. A lot of it was done with a buyback of shares. If you look at the payout ratio now in the S&P 500, the payout from buybacks is greater than the payout for dividends. And in combination, it's up to about 80 or 90%. Along comes The Economist with a big red cover this week, and the story up on the blog suggesting $9 trillion of privatization should occur. You kind of roll your eyes. I put up a commentary about it. There's so many bad ideas involved, you kind of don't know where to start. But traditionally, that kind of privatization has occurred with assets transferring at below market valuations, and as a result, big windfalls into corporate earnings. Could that keep corporate earnings going? You betcha. In that vein, the WikiLeaks came out with a copy of the consolidated text on environmental provisions from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we have that up on the blog as well. BP announced, interestingly enough, very good news for the U.S. dollar in the United States, that the U.S. will be energy self-sufficient by 2035 on shale. Wouldn't surprise me if what's happening in renewables meant that, you know, we didn't need anywhere near as much shale as we would otherwise. But clearly, a lot of competition going on. There's a team up at Harvard that announced they think they figured out the storage issue, which would be incredible news for renewables, particularly solar. If that's the case, we're trying to get the story and get it up on the blog. All this good news for corporations is not necessarily good news for people. Of course, a lot of the corporate profits have been bought with continued downsizing, and more are going to be bought in the future with automation, given what's happening with robotics and fabrication technology. Latest Gallup poll, and this is North America, 42% of the people surveyed said they are worse off financially compared with a year ago. Last time this year, that was 39%. However, 55% of the respondents believe their finances will improve by next year. The Vatican reengineering continues, and we see the Vatican Bank leadership turned over by Francis, the UN pushing a study it's doing on the Vatican pedophilia scandals. I want to stress again for everybody, the real story in the pedophilia has yet to come out. The real story is that the Vatican was operating a global control file system and was doing so in partnership with a lot of the people now attacking the Vatican, including the intelligence agencies. So be careful who you believe on this. Whatever it is, it's a competition for control and power and for the related cash flows. It's got nothing to do with who's right and wrong or the morality play. Wouldn't I love the real story to come out there yet? But that's a long ways away. Net neutrality, very unpleasant decision coming out of the U.S., the D.C. Federal Appeals Court. A federal judge essentially punched a big hole in net neutrality. And let me just read the post that we have up on the blog, because this is very important and very disturbing. This is from RT. Should internet service providers be allowed to restrict access to websites and block certain content from customers depending on how much they pay to be connected? On Tuesday, a federal appeals court said yes. The ruling was handed down early Tuesday by way of a 2-1 decision in the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit in Washington, D.C. And those who've been following the case closely say this week's decision could have colossal consequences for the way Americans access the internet. Appellate judges were tasked with weighing whether or not the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, has jurisdiction with regards to regulating how ISPs deliver content to internet customers. The Open Internet Order adopted by the FCC in 2010 included net neutrality rules requiring broadband service providers to give consumers equal access to all lawful content on the web. But telecom giant Verizon argued in court that federal regulators erroneously awarded themselves the ability to enforce that law. In Tuesday's ruling, the three panels appeal court agreed with Verizon and said the FCC had classified broadband service providers in a manner that excludes ISPs from the anti-blocking and anti-discrimination requirements instilled through the Open Internet Order. So now I'm looking to leave Verizon just like I'm looking to leave Amazon. You know, you kind of wonder what's left. The reality is that one of the biggest problems with this issue is that you have a lot of the telecom providers who hardly represent the product of a market-based system. There's essentially no, as far as I believe, antitrust enforcement in the whole telecom area. So in many parts of the country, your choices are extremely limited. And if anything, you know, you're dealing with trying to bust through monopolies. And if those monopolies have the ability to basically cause content providers to pay them for access, what it's going to do is it's going to shut out the little guys and consolidate even more. So this is one to watch. Net neutrality, very important issue. China powerhouse. We're seeing story after story after story promoting how unbelievably powerful China is. Well, you need to take these all with a grain of sand. In part, we see the American weapon manufacturers doing everything they can to make foreign sales. They need military aggression in Asia, particularly between the Chinese and Japanese. So there's a deeper story here, and the interdependencies are greater than you think. The idea that China is a major global threat is not the case. Right now, if anything, the world needs China growing and growing strongly, because one of the great risks in the global economy is if China slows down. China's got a big problem, and that is they have a lot more people, and the question is, how do they keep those people working? So their unemployment challenge, particularly in the face of automation, is terrific, and that's why the pressure is on for China to reform and start to grow their middle income markets and their domestic consumer markets. If you look at where they are in terms of technology or military power, they just launched their first aircraft carrier. Their satellite system is regional, not global. If anything, the real powerhouse right now in Asia, because of their manufacturing and technology, is Japan. That power has been nipped in the bud by Fukushima, but I assure you right now, Japanese is the greater of the two, despite their aging population and, of course, their high levels of debt. So beware the China powerhouse stories, but there's no doubt about it. When you have that many people and you're growing that strongly, you're going to be a major focus of both investment and the news. But beware the sort of the spin in the folks who are always ready to have the dollar crash. The interdependencies between us and China are far greater whenever anybody talks about all the gold going to China. My question is, yes, but is that being held in storage for Goldman Sachs? Who knows? Marketing Fascism 3.0, we're watching an explosion of trying to interest the retail customer in adopting the Internet of Things and the deeply invasive technology into your home, into your phone, into your life. Just, you know, beware, beware, beware. But it's going to get pretty ridiculous. We see Google buying Nest for wonderful products. I was just about to order one of Nest's smoke alarms, so I canceled it as soon as Google bought. But Google bought Nest for $3 plus billion. That's after buying 7 robotics companies. But clearly Google rushing to be the Internet of Things with cars, with houses, with everything. Things are just going to get a lot more weird as the edible microchips and the wearable technology explodes. And just you want to be very discerning this year, but be prepared for all of this stuff to be in your face and be made out to sound like it's wonderful. I'm going to be posting a lot of the weirder stuff up on the blog. Often in wild cards or technologies, just so you can kind of keep an eye on what's going on. Bitcoin, there have been a few developments over the last couple weeks that really underscore the fact that the push for virtual and digital currencies is very much on. It's going to get a lot of institutional support over the next couple months. And so we're going to have to spend more time on this Leary report talking about Bitcoin and all the different risks and dangers of Bitcoin and virtual currencies. Lai Tan from Gartner's Research made a comment saying that Target could have avoided the problems if it had the benefit of Bitcoin encryption. You know, that's a very strong plug, and we're seeing lots of indication that there are going to be more over the next couple months. So I'm going to spend some more time on Bitcoin, but I want to just keep pounding the drum. I lived through a very extreme experience, and one of the reasons that I was miraculously successful in that experience was that the powers that be could never falsify evidence against me, though they tried on numerous occasions, but they could never cause whatever they falsified to be held up by bank records and by actual financial records. I always managed to keep digital and paper copies, all which could be affirmed and backed up by humans. So I had CPAs and accountants. I had copies of bank statements. I had a paper record. I had a digital record. They were never able to control the archive. If I had depended on Bitcoin, I assure you I would be dead today. That's a much longer conversation. We'll talk about it. But you need to make sure that your financial relationships can be affirmed by archives that you control, and ideally by a series of human beings who can serve as witnesses for you. And I cannot tell you how important it is. So we'll be talking about it more, but be prepared for more on Bitcoin. I also put up on the blog this week a little commentary called Welcome to the Old Texas Theater. There's a wonderful little theater that's been renovated by people in our network in Ballinger, Texas. And it's one I'm very enthusiastic about. It's a real gem. You're seeing a lot more demassification of theater, and now we're seeing things like the Metropolitan Opera being able to be carried in theaters all over the country. So we're watching great acting and dance troupes from the big centers starting to, you know, it's been over the last 10 years, starting to get out on the ground around the country. And I posted 2 weeks ago an article from The Economist pointing out that the museums in North America have pulled in more revenue and more participation than the big, Disney World and other kind of entertainment parks. So I think there's a real hunger for culture on the ground, and I'd love to see a revival of theaters around the country. And I think this one is a real leader. So check it out, because it's a real gem. And if you're driving through West Texas, definitely go check it out. Our hero today is a doctor from East Tennessee named Dr. Robert Dotson, who published one of the most courageous letters I've ever seen in Paul Craig Roberts' column. It's up on the blog. It's called Reflections on Medical Career. Please read it. Please read it. Please read it and take it very much to heart. And it explains the very reasons why during the 90s I literally left the traditional medical system and, with rare exception, do everything I can to stay as far away from it. I would say these things, but I think a doctor of this experience and history is a much more credible source. But it truly helps you to understand in an exceptionally responsible and gracious way how dangerous the medical system has become. I've often told you the story of the time my father, who was a very successful and very capable surgeon, one who cared tremendously about people and helping people, when Medicare was passed, he came home, sat down at the dinner table and cried and said, "If you let government into medicine, they will destroy it." And he's right, although I would say it's not government. It's government acting on behalf of very quiet, invisible interests who have control at the heart of their agenda. I had one person, I sent the Dotson article to one person who wrote back and told a story of talking to a very ancient retired doctor who said, "I had the privilege of practicing in the United States during the golden age of medicine." And they said, "What was that?" And he said, "After penicillin, before Medicare." Very, very sage comment. Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. According to Jim Willey, his sources in China have told him they believe China's gold reserves to be over 15,000 metric tons already. China is part owner of the New York Fed. This is the question. I don't know that. I've tried on many occasions to try and get accurate information on who owns the New York Fed, and I don't believe I've ever gotten it. So, you know, whether or not who really owns the New York Fed, in my mind, is still open to question. China is part owner of the New York Fed, yet this helps support the theory of a gold-backed yuan. Is Mr. Global planning to transfer his flagship from the New York Fed to the Bank of China? If so, how could the yuan renminbi not be the next reserve currency? How long would a process like this take approximately? I would say it would take 25 to 50 years, if at all. I just think this is all part of the China is powerhouse spin, and that's very useful for, you know, more global divide and conquer. But I think, again, the story is deeper. I do think absolutely Mr. Global, is using China in a variety of ways, and be very interesting to think about how they may be using China to stockpile the gold. Certainly, if you're about to slam down the retirement promises in this country, it'd be nice to have your gold out of the country. I don't disagree with that. But if you're anybody who's worried that China's about to take over the reserve currency in the near term, is my opinion is smoking dope. Okay. Is it true that the banks have been quietly withdrawing their funds from the Fed? I don't know that. We're watching the central banks globally doing everything they can to get the banks from parking their money overnight, cutting interest rates. We saw the ECB give serious consideration over the last couple months to literally charging for deposits. I was asked to do a coast-to-coast last night on the fact that Wells Fargo is talking about charging on their international deposits. So, you know, we absolutely see the incentives changing on where money is going to sit. The question continues, this is leading some to believe that Yellen will be ending the free interest on their deposits. If this is the case, would this not increase money velocity? The banks will now have to seek other ways on earning interest on all of this newly created money. Yes, I would point out that we continue to see all the small banks that I know of really being encouraged not to lend money on Main Street, but to send it back into the central system through the Treasury system. So I think they want to keep inflation from kicking up on Main Street, but there is no doubt that the central banks don't want to keep that money piling up and offer free sort of what I call federal credit arbitrage. Question continues, will Yellen be seeking to make the unemployment rate show full employment or whatever is necessary to justify another contraction of QE? No, I don't think Yellen's going to be seeking full employment, but I think Yellen is looking for household income to stabilize. So she's not just looking at different aggregate statistics. She's looking for statistics that inform real strength within the individual and household sector. Causing interest rates to rise is counter to her reputation. What would she be trying to gain? I think the central banks are amenable to a managed increase in rates. I think we are going to see a managed interest rate rise this year. And that's part of returning to healthy markets where savers are paid for their deposits. It's also part of sort of converting to a more balanced market between bonds and equities. Do you believe the economy is strong enough to handle higher interest rates? Yes, I do, at least for a while. Now, what's interesting is if you look at the individual sector, I can't tell you how many people I know are paying 12 to 30% on their deposits. So there's plenty of higher interest rates going on right now. I do think a managed rise in interest rates could facilitate a conversion to equity. They rise too far too fast, and everybody's going to leave equity and say, okay, well, let's just buy 10-year treasuries. Question continues, I don't believe that higher rates were in a card for a while yet. If you look at where we are in the interest rate channel, rates ran up. It would make sense for them to drop back a bit. The yields drop back a bit on an interim basis, but I think the long-term trend is clearly rates are up. But interim could easily be down. We have to see if they're up on the interim basis, then, you know, we could be talking a faster rise than we thought. Won't this kill the housing market? No. Over the long run, I think certainly in North America, you're going to see the federal government squeeze the availability of credit to the housing market and make sure it's available to the corporate economy. Long run, what you're going to see are lower square footages. And in fact, what we've seen in the provision of both the long-term bull market and bonds with interest rates coming down or just very generous federal credit through Fannie, Freddie, FHA, the Federal Home Loan Bank Board to housing, what we've seen is just higher and higher square footages. And I think that's going to reverse to something that a market would be much more what a market economy would produce. Next question. This is a question left over from your valuable year-end report regarding your warning about investing in bitcoins. How can you get in trouble if you set up your own wallet website and not registering on a website like Mr. Gox and all you do is mine bitcoins instead of purchasing them with cash? As I see it, you don't have any investment except your time to lose. And if you luck out and create about 10 bitcoins at around 800, you can purchase something without revealing your identity. I agree that mining for some people may be a reasonable investment of time and resources. If you're interested in learning more about mining, check out the latest Business Week article. They've got a big one about people who are really focused on miners. I would not assume that you're not revealing your identity. You may not be revealing it to the person that you purchase from. But remember, if you have bitcoins, if you are using bitcoins, you open yourself up to somebody, I believe, inserting a history that you didn't have and it literally costing you a great deal of time and money to prove that's a false record. So, I think you want to be very careful to have paper documentation and records of all your Bitcoin transactions. Can you foresee any reason why the powers that be would want to see a correction of 20% or more in the equity markets in 2014? Or do you think they just want to have that arena maintain its high values? It wouldn't surprise me if a correction of 10 to 15%, which is long overdue, is considered acceptable. What it does is it just consolidates and gives you a base for a more sustained rise. So if you're trying to engineer a crash up, I think you want some kind of correction. It may take until summer. Again, the strong part in the equity markets is traditionally November to May. So that may take May to October before we see that kind of correction. It's certainly long overdue. I was expecting it last year. It's hard to imagine that anybody would want a 20% correction, because there you're beginning to bring in serious questions about sort of the market. And I think the thing to watch is the differential between the yield on the 10-year Treasury and the S&P yield. As I said, we're watching between dividends and buybacks about an 80 to 90% payout ratio in the S&P 500. And you're literally seeing yields, real yields, much more attractive on that basis than the 10-year Treasury. As the 10-year Treasury starts to move up, you know, if it should ever significantly outperform the S&P yield, then you're going to see a real shift between markets. And as I said, I think the way the central banks are going to manage, they're going to manage a managed rise, which in no way is going to threaten the strong equity markets. Thank you so much for doing a Solaria report on estate planning. You're welcome. We have a family home, a second piece of real estate, a few cars, and some personal items that have value. When both my husband and I pass away, we'd like everything to go to our kids without having to go through probate and without them having to pay taxes on what they inherit. What sort of trust would we set up to meet these ends? Also, according to local attorneys, setting up any kind of a trust will be approximately $2,000 at minimum. We understand that both NOLO and legal forms have forms for setting up trusts in a do-it-yourself format for much less money. Is it advisable to use these do-it-yourself methods? Thank you so much. That is something that Ann Christensen and I discussed, in fact, on our interview, and I would strongly recommend you listen to. It was a very useful interview, and she's a very delightful, useful person. Here's what I do as described in the interview. I always use the software forms and packages and online information to do it myself, to get prepared, to get organized, and I do the best I can to do it myself. Then once I've done that, I've gotten everything all organized, and I think I've really nailed the description and the situation, then I take it to an attorney and proceed to discover, of course, that there are things I didn't know. And those forms are, you know, not always the best. So what I would do is I would try the do-it-yourself method to get the first 80% of the way there. I would interview attorneys. Be careful who you hire. You want somebody you can trust, and you want someone who comes well recommended. So I would be very careful on which one I chose. And then I would spend the money to get it done right and to make sure it's right. But I think we talk more about it in the interview, and that will help. One of the things I did mention in the interview is the Aging with Dignity forms that Jo Sebehart discussed when she was on the Solaria Report. If you haven't listened to that interview about healthcare proxies, I would also listen to that as well and get out that Aging with Dignity form, because it's a great planning tool helping to deal with something that, you know, many of us would much rather avoid. And speaking of great ways of avoiding things, in Let's Go to the Movies, I want to talk about season four, the new season of Downton Abbey. One of my favorite forms of escapism is watching Downton Abbey. At the end of season three, the family heir, Matthew Crawley, is killed in a car accident and fails to make a will. And in season four, we deal with the various struggles of what happened. Matthew, of course, being a very conscientious attorney, it's hard to imagine that, you know, someone this conscientious who's a practicing attorney would leave his own complex estate without a will. Of course, the family's not prepared for his death. Matthew had lived through World War I and was in the prime of life. No one expected him to die. And so, you know, it's a reminder that it's always best to be prepared, even if the chances are small. Ultimately, what emerges, and I don't want to give too much of the plot away, a letter emerges with witnesses that was, you know, that is literally found by accident months later, where he made a pre-will, if you will. And then, of course, we have the question of, does it have legal standing? And then doing it this way results in an increase in taxes. But in the meantime, there's incredible confusion and dissension in the family as a result of the whipsaw in terms of who and what has authority going forward. You really mess with the family ecosystem. And exactly one of the things you want to think about in a will, because what I've lived through a fair amount of deaths in my family, and what I've found is that there really is a very fragile family ecosystem full of all sorts of values and issues, and you really want to pay attention to the intangible ecosystem and the transfer of all sorts of values and meanings and stories and history. And that's one of the things Ann and I discuss on our interview that will be posted this evening along with my comments today on Money and Markets. So I won't say I hope you enjoy that, because I'm not sure estate planning is always the most enjoyable thing, but it is January. It's the beginning of the year. It's the time we want to make sure our paperwork and our financial planning is in order. So I hope, if you don't have a will, I hope you will listen to that one. I hope you will also go back in the archives and listen to the wonderful one we did on healthcare proxies and take those very seriously and very much to heart, and consider spending some time in 2014 making sure you've got your estate planning in order. Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for January the 16th. Coming up, a great John Rappaport report. Whenever I'm down in the mud, John always comes. I said he's like a psychic tow truck who pulls me out of the mud. And that one will be next week, and I'll be talking with you about money and markets as well. And then the following week, a great one with Chuck Gibson on the bond market. Think of precious metals in the stock market as the tail, and the bond market is the dog. Big question this year is going to be, will interest rates go up? So good questions on interest rates, because interest rates are going to have a dramatic impact on everything and everyone. And this turn in the bond market is a 30-year, 40-year kind of event. And then February 6th, we'll be back with Dr. Joseph Farrell for the first of many wonderful quarterly interviews with Dr. Farrell, and certainly the first of 2014. So I'm very much looking forward to that. So until next week, January 23rd, when I'll be talking with you on Money and Markets, and we'll have John Rappaport. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.